I'm going to Stan and Ollie. And what I like about Stan and Ollie is that it's almost like another biopic that I liked very much, but a lot of people didn't. I know you kind of just fair about it, but there was this Jimi Hendrix. What was it called? All is not lost. All the drugs you can do. It was a Jimi Hendrix movie with Andre 3000. I thought it was a pretty solid documentary for one main reason.
We have a guest who's going to stay with us. He brought himself all the way over from America.
What's the name again, mate?
Jimi Hendrix.
All is by my side. And what I liked about this is that this takes place in 1966, and it's not the Jimi Hendrix story.
Right.
It's not him being born and how he died. It was a specific part of his life when he went to London in 1966 and got discovered and first formed the Experience. It was a significant part of his life that left the impact on the rest of his career and his life.
I like that. Watching Stan and Ollie, I thought, see, this is one of the places that Bohemian Rhapsody blew it, trying to tell the story of Queen from the beginning to the end, rather than with movies like this, where they go like, no, this specific period in time, this small period that was important.
That was very important, very significant.
This is what we'll focus on.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, the mainstream, they want the typical biopic where we want to see the beginning to
see
the end.
See them when they were kids.
Yeah, see them, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we want the whole thing there. Or we want to see how the band got together and how until somebody dies. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, I ain't leave till somebody dies. But with Stan and Ollie, it's like that Hendrix biopic that I was talking about, because this is centered on a very important part of their life, which is when they went on tour in Britain in 1953, because at that point they were starting to be, they saw themselves as fading. They felt irrelevant. They wanted to be relevant again and want to get back in the good graces of their fans. So they decided to actually do that by making a movie, a Robin Hood spoof. But before they could do that, they had to prove that they could pull in crowds. So they went on this tour across the UK, starting kind of rough, but eventually catching momentum. And kind of getting, but the real thing is that this was the first time in their lives where they were probably finally honest with each other.
Yeah.
You know, they had been carrying a false friendship for years. They had been carrying grudges. They had been faking being nice to each other. At one point it was just kind of like, bitch, fuck you. You know, I've been waiting 30 years to say this to you. Let's go ahead and take a look at the trailer for Stan and Ollie, and we'll be back with our review.
Roll sound. Roll camera. Ready, boys?
Quiet, please.
We're at West Scene 12, take one.
Feel about the size of the audiences?
I've been a little disappointed.
And they said, could you persuade Stan and Ollie to do some publicity in order to turn the tour around?
Would there be any more money?
They said no.
Well, who is they?
People. The worst kind.
Here we are.
The Eiffel Tower.
How is Oliver?
He pulling weight?
How's your knee?
It hurts.
Has he been pushing you a little too hard, mate?
No.
You could have long time ago said goodbye, Oliver.
That's all in the past.
You're not still carrying that around, are you? Because I went ahead and did a picture with someone else 16 years ago.
You and Harry are just going to be great together.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't sleep for days when they told me what you did.
And I couldn't sleep when I did it.
You betrayed me. Betrayed our friendship. I loved us.
You loved Laurel and Hardy. But you never loved me.
You know Stan, like, oh shit.
Yo, when somebody stops and slowly turns back.
Yeah, especially a big man like that. He's like, bitch, you know I'll eat you.
The doctors told me I can't continue with the tour. My heart won't take it.
He asked me, since you were sick, if I wouldn't mind carrying on the show with somebody else.
May I introduce to you Mr. Nobby Cook?
You're not leaving, are you, Stan? The show must go on.
That was pure magic. It's brilliant.
We'd like to finish now with a little dance.
You sure? I can do it.
I'll miss this when we're gone.
So will you.
What time is it now?
Hold this.
Do we really need that trunk?
Nah, you can't have a biopic unless you have the people who can pull off the subjects who are very important to telling that story. And I have to say, you know, that's one of the things people are going to be talking about. How well did Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly, who play Stan and Laura respectively, how well did they pull their parts off? And, you know, from the moment I saw the trailer, I thought, okay, Steve Coogan's got it down, man.
Yeah.
At Stan Laurel. Steve Coogan is a great impressionist anyway, but I never questioned him as Stan Laurel, man. And I liked his character because, one, it didn't take as much makeup. I mean, maybe they poked his ears out a little bit more.
Might not take as much makeup, but look at how much weight he lost. He's emaciated from the Steve Coogan I'm used to. I remember first time I saw his trailer, it took me a long time to recognize that was even him.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about that because because he became the character so much to me that I was watching Stan Laurel.
Yeah, I was quite impressed. Like even in the subtle moments, the way he talked, he completely embodied Stan Laurel.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like I said, man, maybe he lost weight, maybe they made his ears stick out a little bit more. But what's great about Steve Coogan in this is that Steve Coogan, he has to play. If anybody knows Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy, I grew up with this, like I'm a huge fan or an aficionado or something. I mean, I did grow up watching a lot of Hal Roach. Hal Roach is the guy who gave us things like these old shorts, like The Little Rascals.
Yeah, and Harold Lloyd.
Yeah, and Laurel and Hardy. And I grew up watching these, man, and I loved them.
Same here.
Yeah, when they would just come on the middle of the day. They'll come on after cartoons or something. Kids really got into them later.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much of our audience even knows them, because it wasn't like the Three Stooges who had the child audience coming on in the mornings,
yeah,
and in the afternoons and everywhere. But Laurel and Hardy, mostly, they made movies, so that was something that you kind of had to catch on a weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember like on Sundays or in the middle of the day on Saturday after some midday movie or something, they would show Laurel Hardy short. And so if you're familiar with him, or if you're not, Oliver Hardy was like, he was the fat one. You know, he was the one that was always getting exasperated and mad because Stan Laurel was... He was quiet and he was almost kind of shy and kind of meek, but he was the bumbler. He was always getting them into trouble. That was the phrase. It's another fine mess you've gotten me into.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's so sweet.
Yeah, he just and you felt sorry for him because he looked like a little dog because he just looked mentally ill.
Yeah, sometimes he just lost in his own world doing shit. While Oliver's just staring at him like, you dumb motherfucker, you're not even gonna look over here, are you?
They would tear up shit. They would cause all kind of trouble. And Stan Lowe, he'd just be like, I don't even know who I am right now. Right. Like, is he high or something? Some kind of opioids? What's going on with you, man? But a lot of these things go. Stan Laurel was the one who was doing a lot of the writing. He was the one that's creating a lot of the material. He was the one that was the business guy behind it. And so what you had here with Steve Coogan playing that role is that you had a guy who had to be physically funny. He had to do physical gags. He had to, you know, and the jokes were not, you know, they weren't subtle jokes. They were vaudeville jokes. They were very physical in all kind of ways. But he had to like be subdued through all that.
Yeah.
You know, even when it came down to just being kind of serious and emotional with things, he had to kind of pull back. And Steve Coogan is not that kind of, he can do anything. He's a great actor, but you know, we don't see that side of him that often in movies like
right.
this. Now John C. Reilly as Oliver Hardy. I have to say, man, when when I saw him in the movie, and I'm finding a frame with him right now. Let's see here. When he first came up, I ain't gonna lie, I saw nothing but rubber.
Right.
He looked like a white Professor Clump. You know, like, hey, is Eddie Murphy in there? You know, because I was like, man, you know, I saw the makeup, and even in interviews, John C. Reilly, who everybody knows is kind of a thin guy, you know, at least not that fat. Right. You know, he ain't that, but he said.
Right. I mean, he might be slightly chubby, like, by Hollywood standards.
By Hollywood, there you go. That's perfect. But he's, you know, he talked about how he had to be under so much prosthetics, a full body prosthetic, that it had to come with its own cooling system, because otherwise that shit, it would put you in a heat stroke.
Oh damn!
And it was very obvious. I mean, it's, if you look at it, it's just too smooth.
Yeah.
Especially in the bottom jowl area.
Yeah.
But after 10 minutes, look, you can look past a lot of things if somebody becomes another person.
Yeah, if they can bring it, if they can act outside of the prosthetics and the makeup.
Yeah, and I have to say, John C. Reilly, man, both of them, you know, as I said, did an amazing job. They both were Oliver and Hardy.
It's funny, going into this, I kept hearing so much about John C. Reilly. It's like, man, he should get an Oscar for
Laurel and Hardy. I keep saying Oliver and Hardy. I'm sorry, Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah. Hearing so much about John C. Reilly and how he should get an Oscar, you know, best performance. And I was watching it, and I was like, well, why are y'all sleeping on Steve Coogan? Because I think he's actually bringing more to it. But then, like you said, about 10, 15 minutes later, I'm like, no, these guys are both of them. They're on par with each other.
They are. It's really, look, if they were to nominate one of these guys, they'd have to share it.
Yeah.
They'd have to, like, take that, they'd have to chainsaw that statue in half and give them a piece, because they both are leading guys here. Mm-hmm. There's not one of them is supporting. Right. They're both leads. And now here's where it's weird. And, like, if this was any other movie, they would be up for best actor and best actress. You know? Because this is a romantic comedy, man, when you get right down to it. I'll explain later. But I think one of the things that helped with it is that they what the approach that the movie takes is kind of unique. They've almost made sort of a fantasy world themselves. They know that the strength of their chemistry is within the comedy that they do. Mm-hmm. So the movie kind of blurs the line of how much, you know, like how much of their material went over into their real life.
Right. Yeah. You're right. The material spills into their real life, and the movie often stops to let these guys do some of the routines. Something I would normally be annoyed with, but they get it so pitch perfectly. I just enjoy watching them do it.
Yeah, it gets because they, you know, there are times when it's hard to tell. That's the only thing I would say, that the movie, they don't make it obvious, and maybe it's for the best. How much of this is them knowing that they're performing and they're just used to doing that, being on all the time, or how much of it is them? How much is this is the movie is just making the movie a comedy to kind of reflect their material that they did in their movies and on stage. You know, there's a lot of, you know, one scene I remember is like, okay, this is, I was just a little confused because it's not one where they're performing. Like, Stan Laurel is, you know, he's tearing up shit. You know what I mean? Like for his little bumbling thing that he does,
yeah.
he's about to cause some property damage. I'd be mad as hell if he came and turned on my place for a laugh.
Oh, well, you picked that scene. I really got the impression from that scene that the two of them set that up because they like to do their routines when they like, okay, we're about to meet somebody. They've seen us in the movie. We'll go in. We'll do number six.
Ah, I see. Yeah, yeah.
And just kind of charm this person behind the counter.
And it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it. I was just wondering. But you've made it clear to me. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, hey, it's brilliant. What I liked about it, though, is that, you know, they're a married couple. I know people make that joke all the time, but no, they really are, man. It's endearing. They're a married couple because it doesn't help that he's calling them babe all the time, even though everybody else doesn't. But he puts a special ring to it.
It's interesting that Oliver Hardy's nickname was babe, Because that was also the nickname of Curly from the Three Stooges.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Babe was just a very popular name back in the day.
And you got Babe Ruth. Like, maybe that's just like a fat guy thing that you just call people Babe.
Maybe it's like Dre today. So, you know.
Like Babe, the blue, big blue ox.
Yeah, yeah. But they would finish each other's sentences, man. You know, they would finish each other's words and also finish each other's actions in a way. They were more married than their wives were. Look, I mean, it's sometimes you wonder, man, okay, y'all fucking, because they, look, they holding hands, they getting in bed together. And it's just like, that's great, because they were perfect for each other. Mm. They got along better than they got along with their wives, I think. Like, they knew each other. It was adorable to see them get into a little spat, not want to talk to each other. And then Oliver Hardy would say, I'd like tea. And the woman would be like, how do you want it? And Stan would be like, a lot of sugar, whatever the fuck it is, a side of ham. Yeah. You know, but he would finish it for him. And then he's like, can't be mad at you. You know, I loved it, man. You know, and really, that's what it is, man. You know, this is a heterosexual movie about, but that is a romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. I've learned something with this. I mean, which was obvious out there. Romantic comedies, it's not about the sex. It's not even about the romance. It's about the meeting, the chemistry, and the breakup.
The breakup.
Get back together.
Uh-huh. Will they or won't they?
Will they or won't they? We know, and since we already know a little bit about these guys, we get kind of in the middle of them meeting. And the meeting is them being reunited to go on this tour. That's the relation.
Yeah.
Going throughout the tour, that's the endurance of the relation. Of course, they have a huge fight, and will they get back together again? And you want them to, because, hey, look, they might not be gay, but they're great together. You know what I mean?
Besides their history, there's also a big secret hanging over their heads
throughout the movie. Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess we won't say what it is, but, you know, like with anybody who's a performer, there's business that gets in the way. Something happens. They start to want to go their own ways and do things their own ways. But, you know, that's all the things of a romantic comedy. Shit, I kind of learned. It's not a good movie. I kind of learned that with Venom, though. It's like, you know, man, I'm like, man, all right. You know, maybe people like this because they just really like this couple, you know, Venom and Eddie Brock. I was really liking this movie, and I was wondering, man, is it because, you know, because I see a lot of you and I, you know,
I was saving it, but I was going to say that's the thing, like the longer the movie went on, I was just like, I feel like I'm watching our future right here. The longer it went on, the more I was like, yep, yeah, and I see us going out just like this.
Yeah, I was looking at that too. That's why when I watched it, I was like, please end on a happy note. Because I was picking the good things from it.
I was like, yeah, that would be like Corey to suddenly get in my face because he's mad at me about something that happened 16 years ago.
Yeah, he's right. We've known each other long enough. I can't argue with that. He's right. And Stan Laurel really was I thought it was crazy how his life was kind of paralleling mine.
Oh, yeah.
Because he likes to work too much.
Uh-huh.
And he had
a Russian wife.
Yeah. Nina Ronda plays his wife. And really, both the wives are good. Sarah Henderson plays Oliver Laurel's wife. That's Oliver Hardy. Hardy, God damn it! I'm just gonna say Stan and Ollie. Shit. But she plays. I'm just gonna say the fat one, the skinny one. Now she plays Oliver Hardy's wife. You might remember her from Trainspotting. But both the wives are good. But man, I was looking at that Russian wife, uh-huh. And I was like, boy, she got an attitude just like my wife.
Oh yeah, no, I noticed that.
I was like,
especially the way she would talk to people.
Ooh, the way, yeah. She would get, man, she would just get like bitchy with people over nothing.
I forget pain because pain is only in your mind, Oliver.
It's not in his mind, you know, it's in his knees. And there's no way that you can do the scene in this movie where you fall into the river.
I've been telling you about the script.
Oh.
Director can use double.
That's what I told her.
Preston Star just used double.
Oh, and it's okay for Babe to sit about in a river all day. Is it catching his death of cold? I mean, honestly, Stanley, come on.
Why you say Stanley?
What?
What?
She ready to whoop our ass. Bitch, what you say? You want to do this? I was like, man, I'm glad my wife didn't come see this with me. You see, his wife is telling him the same thing I tell you. You listen to me. It, man, I'm not lying. Am I at home?
I'm glad you saw the parallels too, because I didn't want to say this and have you go, what?
No, I don't mind you saying it to me. I don't want you to say it to her while she was there, because she'll get mad just because she wants to argue with you. Nah, man, you saw in the trailer how they were arguing with each other, and it really is heartbreaking to see that, man, because they do a good job of just showing how much they are so good together. And I think the movie does a good job at that, because what the movie does, the movie, again, adding to their chemistry, it helps that they are able to recreate just the moments from their acts, moments from their movies.
As a matter of fact, the thing I worried about with them doing that, I was like, you know, this is comedy from the 30s, and it's pretty broad, and I don't know if it's going to translate. Even to somebody like me who grew up with this, watching it as a kid and always loving these guys, will I still find it funny or just quaint? And they do those routines, and I was like, yeah, man, they still funny. I still get a big kick out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I left wanting to go watch some of their movies.
Oh, yeah. From a technical standpoint, they do a great job at recreating that, man. If you watch this movie, watch through the credits. You will see them create. They'll show the original footage, or the real footage of where that was taken from, this Western that they did.
Yeah, I remember that Western.
And they recreated that to a T, man. But Martin is right. You know, their stage X, a lot of people going to be like, man, I want to watch this old shit. Vaudeville. Some shit my great-granddad used to do. You know, those acts really hold up, man. Mm-hmm. You know, they show you just how great these people worked with together with just chemistry and
timing
and comic ingenuity, man.
Just like the mountains are blue, like the pine, I am lonesome for you.
That was actually funny, man. It's funny because of the anticipation that you know is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, they do a good job at showing that. You know what? You know one person that I think a lot of people should be talking about in this. There's a guy that had me laughing so hard.
The agent,
Rufus Jones, as the agent, man. Because he's not really slimy. He just knows how to manipulate these guys into doing what's in their best interest.
And he knows Hollywood speak. It's just when he's saying everything he says, you want to go, you're lying. Even though I know you're telling the truth, you're lying.
Yeah. No, there are so many moments. And what I like about it is that
he's always there to put a positive spin on anything.
Yeah, you think that, because you really do think that he is you really do think that he's going to be like this guy that's ripping them off, feeding them lies. And he is lying to him, but he's lying to him because he's like, these dipshits here, they ain't going to know what to do unless I trick them into doing the best thing.
How do you feel about the size of the audiences?
I've been a little disappointed.
And they said, could you persuade Stan and Ollie to do some publicity in order to turn the tour around?
Would there be any more money?
They said no.
Well, who is they?
People. Worst kind.
It was so cool because he said, I know they're not going to do this. They're not going to do this bullshit and do it for, especially doing it for free.
Right.
But he was able to like pull that silver tongue out, man, and spin it away. And Rufus Jones plays the agent or the manager. And he's great, man. Every time he came into the movie or, you know, walked on screen, it was a funny moment.
Yeah.
You can tell it's an exaggerated character. It's an exaggerated movie, man. It's not a straight biopic. Like I said, there's a tinge of creating this fantasy world that represents their films and their stage acts, but it's very entertaining, man. And you know, it's okay as long as they kind of stick to the points, again, not deviating too much away from. Look, I don't know. Maybe I should go back and read the story on this and see how much is different.
Yeah, they were working from a book that was taken from just a specific time, and there's nothing in it that seems inaccurate. Like sometimes you can just smell when people getting creative, you know, mm-hmm. taking creative license. And there's little parts here and there where you go like, okay, you throw this in to make it entertaining, but it didn't feel like a complete lie.
Yeah. I'm really impressed. If you can keep kind of the key points and stay on them, that's what happens when you center on a specific time period. Mm-hmm. You don't have to deviate away too much from the story. And as I said, if you catch the heart in the film, then that will work wonders, man. I'm really impressed with the guy that directed it, John S. Barrett. And talk about a, because this is a very sweet film.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
It's a very sweet film. It's a very heartwarming film, which is coming from a director who's only done, he's done a lot of TV, I think, but he, you know, his last movie was so the opposite of this. It was called Filth. It had
James McAvoy?
James McAvoy.
We're such a uniquely successful race. This nation brought the world television, whiskey, and of course, me, Detective Sergeant Bruce Robertson.
You know, this is that's the Red Band trailer. Even that made me blush, man. I had to stop in some points. It's a rough, mean-spirited movie, man, from what I've seen in the trailer. I haven't seen the film. But total opposite of what he's done here. You know, I might be a little biased on enjoying this movie because I used to love these shorts, man. The movie does do something that I think is cool. It shows why this had an endearing, enduring power, or this lasting power with kids. Because it took me back to when I remember watching this when I was a kid, man. They've gone on from vaudeville to just, you know, being stuff that kids liked. Because the comedy is really broad. I used to love this growing up, man, because, you know, they show most of their vaudeville stuff in the movie.
Yeah.
But those shorts, man, the best parts are when they try to kill Oliver Hardy, man.
Clean that mess up while I get something to put it in. Look out!
He was always like, oh!
Oh! Oh! Oh, that's what it meant. I used to love that scream that he did. Oh!
Oh!
Oh, they would tear a house up.
Yeah,
I mean, he felt like they built a house just so they could have him fall like three stories through. Oh, I mean, man, I watched these today because I was looking this up, and I watched about four of these, man, and I was laughing so hard, man. Mm. I mean, my stomach was hurting watching this fool just fall all over the place. they used to try to kill this man. Everything that he would do, it would involve him getting like beat up or something falling on him or him falling over something or falling into something.
Well, it's always fun to see the uptight guy have things go wrong for him or he get bashed.
Oh! Yeah, I used to love it, man. He's like, no, this shit really hurt, man. See, I know you love this kind of stuff, man. You love seeing people get plummeled and stuff dropped on them.
Well, also like the moments where Stan is doing something and Oliver's just looking at him, just getting more and more pissed off. Just give me that.
Man, I want y'all to see. Man, well, let me see if I can find it. There would be times that he would just be so confused. He would just look at the camera. Look at this. Man, I used to grow up thinking like, man, he's, I think he really is kind of challenged.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I don't know what's going on with this guy. But yeah, man, I could, seriously, you see how we laugh, and I could watch these for hours. I mean, just like the Three Stooges, some like grown man just getting beat on us. Just doing stupid shit, and physically hurting them.
Tearing up somebody's house.
Wow, you got me thinking about the Three Stooges.
I know.
Like, how come
you the three men I sent for? Certainly, lady. All right, you mug, spread out.
How come they never got the Avengers of Stupidity back then? like a star, a Laura Hardy of Three Stooges crossover, man. I'm sorry, taking me back. All right, you know, Martin, I'll let you close this out. How are you feeling about any complaints about this?
Yes. The complaint I have about the movie is that for all that's good about it, it's pretty mild.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little too mild. It's so mild.
Yeah.
You said this director did mostly TV shows, and a lot of time it shows. It has that feeling of a TV biopic, and you know, it's low on drama and tension. It's very sweet. It's nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's almost like it's nice to take that break, but it also makes me go, like, if somebody's like, yeah, so am I gonna like it? I'm like, you'll like it, but it won't rock you, and you feel like it should. There should be something more there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a movie where if you don't know these guys, if you aren't at all familiar with Laurel and Hardy, I don't know if this is gonna do it for you because it's so mild. You'd watch it, you'd be like, yeah, that was all right, I guess. But if you are a fan, then you're just the performances alone are what will amaze you.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I don't know if that really hurts the movie because it's a smaller story, so I can see it being a smaller budget. I get the locations right. They get the period right. You know,
they do.
I think when we think about some of these biopics that go back in the day, we think of like Epic Scope or something. You know?
No, I don't want that, and I don't want to see. Well, this is when they were on drugs and all that.
Yeah, you know,
it's fine to tell the story like it is.
But you're right. It is a smaller movie. It's definitely a smaller budget. You know, so I don't. You know, but I, like I said, I was just kind of, I was feeling the chemistry being so strong between these characters, and I feel exactly like you do, but I don't know, is it fair to hold it against the
right?
film?
Right. Yeah, it puts me in that weird position also.
Because I walked out and somebody asked me, they said, "How do you feel about it?" And I think I was just conditioned to think that, well, it's not so big in scope that it needs to be an Academy Award winner or nominee. But then again, why not? I don't know. I guess that's another thing too, man. You were right. It's a story there where that's the problem you run into when you do center on a specific part of a biopic of a person's life. You have to go in kind of knowing some things, or you have to be a fan.
Yeah.
Biopics are there to educate because they show you the whole story.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they educate well all the time, but they're trying to make it, well, maybe not educate, but make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, it can be pulled off by having something very quick in the beginning, almost not quite a montage, but enough that tells you, sits the audience down and goes like, all right, this is what's everything that's happened up to this point. This is where these guys were. This is where they were at their most popular, and then now they're on a decline, and go from here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. I recognize where it could fall short of greatness, but I really enjoyed it. I give it a full price.
I'm so back and forth on that, because I think about people like, you know what, if I get, I'll give it a low full price, because it is such a charming movie.
It really is, man.
Yeah.
It's not anything huge. It's definitely for a smaller scale audience and for a specific audience.
I can't say I sat there was anything where I went like, I don't know about that. That never really happened.
That's the best way to put it, man. Fuck it. Full price. Reluctantly, I give it some full price.
How do you feel about the size of the audiences?
I've been a little disappointed.
And they said, could you persuade Stan and Ollie to do some publicity in order to turn the tour around?
Would there be any more money?
They said no.
Well, who is they?
People.